The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Time to get you dialed into the biggest stories of the day. This is the Daily 10 with Matt Chernoff.
All right, here we go. It's time for the Thursday edition of the Daily 10. Your friend Matt back again to take you through this 10-minute sports journey of ours. We'll get to the college football weekend with Georgia getting ready to host South Carolina, Falcons on the road at Tampa. But we start with the baseball, where the Braves lost to the Rockies 3-2 last night in 10 innings. That's back-to-back one-run losses for the Braves. So their East lead now drops to 3.5 games. It's 4 in the all-important loss column, though. Braves are now 4-8 in extra innings, and some of the same stuff that has bitten them in these late-game extra inning losses jumped up and bit them again. More on that coming up in a minute. Let's start, though, with Waskari Noah, who I thought his stuff was really good, considering the conditions he was trying to pitch through, and his pitch count kind of got drawn up as the game went along. But he ended up going 4 2/3, gave up just 4 hits, a couple of runs, a couple of walks, and 8 strikeouts. And Freddie Freeman, who is as dependable as anybody defensively, made a poor throw on a bunt that allowed the Rockies to tie that game 1-1 in the fifth, or else maybe Enoa pitches deeper into the game. Enoa got a big strikeout in that inning and then a walk that allowed Colorado to take a 2-1 lead. So again, I thought he pitched pretty well, and the reason I bring it up is you're going to watch him and then Ian Anderson today sort of battle for that third spot should the Braves make the postseason, to see who Snit has the most faith and trust in a spot like that. Offensively for the Braves, it was slim pickings outside of Eddie Rosario, who had a 2-out single in the second to give the Braves a 1-0 lead. He also had the game-tying home run in the fifth. So outside of that, there wasn't much more to talk about offensively. Freddie Freeman did come up with 2 on in the ninth inning, crushed a ball to center field that looked like the Braves were going to walk it off in that spot. And you saw Ozzie Albies raise his right hand coming around third, but Colorado made a really good catch, sent the game to extra innings. In extra innings, the Braves went with A.J. Minter with that runner placed to second. Give Colorado credit. They did one of those little things like make a productive out by rolling over a ground ball to second that moved a runner to third, and then they scored on a base hit with the drawn-in infield. So Colorado with a 3-2 lead put the Braves in the position where they have struggled to move runners in extra innings, to come up with key hits, and it happened again. Austin Riley struck out to lead off the 10th, so they couldn't move the runner. Braves did get a one-out walk for Adam Duvall, but Travis d'Arnaud struck out. And then with 2 on, you saw Dansby pop up to end the game. The Braves finished 1-for-10 with runners in scoring position. Now, they came into the night hitting 175 in extra innings, and that number went down. So the boomer bust offense, which is great when the booms are coming, and that's the home runs, when those aren't there, they don't do those boring little things that we don't talk about until the games really mean a lot, like advancing a runner, avoiding a big strikeout. These are things that when you get into the postseason, if you're fortunate enough to get there, against good pitching, you're going to have to do stuff like that. And this team really is not constructed that way. I mean, when they made the moves at the deadline, it was for a lot of big potential boom bats, Duvall and Solar, and even before that, Jock Peterson. Braves had 10 hits last night. They walked 4 times, and the only run, the 2 runs they scored, they got the Rosario single, which was nice, but they only had 1 solo home run. When they're not getting multiple home runs and crooked inning home runs, some of this stuff is going to happen. The Rockies only had 5 hits last night and 2 walks. No home runs, but they won the ball game. So the Braves, again, their lead is 3.5 in the East, 4 in the all-important loss column. They will try to avoid being swept today with Ian Anderson against Herman Marquez at 12:20 at Truist Park. Then they'll hop aboard a jet, head out west for a very big 10-game West Coast road trip. Add to that the conclusion of the suspended game against the Padres back in July. So it's 11 games with the Phillies at the same time facing the Mets and then the Orioles and the Pirates. So the Braves have to take care of business here like it's the old days of the NL West against the Giants, the Arizona Diamondbacks, and the Padres. All right, we're brought to you by the Daily Draft in downtown Woodstock. If you want to watch your big, important September and then October baseball or your college football weekend, your NFL weekend, do it at the Daily Draft. It's easy to find on Main Street. You'll see a walk-up window, which is one of the cool things to be able to order drinks before you even walk through the door. So you just want to enjoy a beautiful Woodstock fall evening. Or you walk through the door and you'll see wall-to-wall flat screens, self-serve taps, which is super convenient and fun, a craft beer bar, upstairs, darts, billiards, everything you could want, and best of all, a chef-inspired menu, not deep-fried sports bar options. Something for everyone in the family or you and your boys to enjoy. When you mention my podcast, if you go in for lunch, mention the Daily 10, they'll take 10% off your lunch order. There are so many right answers, from the flatbreads to the wings to the sandwiches, great salads. Find it for yourself online at thedailydraft.net or downtown Woodstock on Main Street. Mention the Daily 10, they'll take 10% off your lunch order. Okay, let's get to the Falcons, who are 12.5-point underdogs as they'll play at Tampa on Sunday at 4:05 in that dumb pirate ship in Central Florida. I don't know about you folks, but nothing says fun in Tampa like mid-September when it's 85 degrees, which it will be at kickoff Sunday, a 60% chance of rain, and 65% humidity. So, again, it'll be a steamer. So the Falcons are 12.5-point underdogs. They were 13-point underdogs earlier in the week. If you're looking for some kind of positive note, the last three times the Falcons have been double-digit underdogs, they've actually played pretty well, winning two of the games outright. Last season, they were a double-digit dog in Week 16 at Kansas City. The Chiefs were an 11-point favorite over the Falcons in that game, and if not for a missed Younghoe Koo field goal, that game would have gone to overtime. So the Falcons covered that with ease. They were 14-point underdogs 2 years ago when they played in New Orleans, but they win that game outright 26-9. It was one of the more dominant efforts we've seen out of a Falcon team over the last couple of years. And they were also 10.5-point underdogs that same season at San Francisco in Week 15. They won again outright 29-22. I'm really curious to see how different, how much better the Falcons can be in Week 2 than Week 1. And there are a lot of things to clean up, but let's keep in mind, even if they clean everything up, Tampa's just significantly better and the Falcons might not win the game. And I'm actually okay with that. If the Falcons lose because they're just out-talented, okay, that's one thing. Losing because you beat yourself with mind-numbing penalties, sloppy, undisciplined play, that's a different thing entirely. We all know what we want to see them improve on, right? Cut the penalties down, better red zone execution, better third down conversions, and for the love of everything that's holy in Matt Ryan's body, getting stuff blocked on the interior of the offensive line against Ndamukong Suh and Vita Vea. That's a tall order. But I look at this as a great opportunity game for the Falcons. The expectation universally is Tampa's going to kill them. That's what everybody thinks. There's almost nothing to lose in this scenario unless you do get boat raced. If you lose the game 38-3 and just look dreadful, yeah, that's the worst possible scenario because you'll be exactly what fans and media are saying you are. Both locally and nationally, people have already said this is a 4-13 team. There's nothing to play for. They're awful. That might be true, but Arthur Smith and the Falcons, again, have a great opportunity to show their own fan base why things might be different around here, where they can say, no, we're not as talented as the team across the line, but we're going to be so well-coached and prepared that we have shots to win games like these where we are the less talented football team. That's something we haven't seen around here in a good while. In fact, maybe the last time we saw it was in 2016, Kyle Shanahan's second season as OC. Around that year, it's mostly been when the Falcons are the lesser talented team, you don't have a ton of faith, and even when they were more talented than the competition, you thought they'd find a way to lose tough football games, and that happened. This is not apples to apples what I'm going to tell you here, but in week two of 2016 season, the Falcons were coming off a really horrid performance at home against Tampa Bay in the opener, and everybody just considered things are going to get sideways, not going to be good. It was a continuation of the 2015 season in everybody's minds. Instead, the Falcons, who went out west to play the Raiders, won 35-28. They were underdogs. We learned very quickly Kyle Shanahan was one of the best offensive play callers in the league, and he just had pretty good talent. He turned a pretty good Matt Ryan into an MVP. Outside of Julio Jones, he got more out of guys like Mohamed Sanu, who was never more than just an okay receiver in Cincinnati, Devontae Freeman, who was a fourth-round pick without huge expectation. Same thing with Tevin Coleman, who was a third-round pick. Kyle made them better. He also got the most out of Jacob Tammy, remember him? Or Aldrick Robinson? Taylor Gabriel, a rookie tight end named Austin Hooper, he coached that team up in a legendary way. I'm not comparing this team to that team by any stretch. I'm just curious what Arthur Smith and Dean Pease can do to coach up talent in games like this where the experts and everybody assumes you're going to get your brains beat in. We'll see what happens. All right, let's move on. Georgia is a big old fat 32-point favorite against South Carolina Saturday night at 7 o'clock in Athens. It looks like Georgia has something they haven't had in a very long time. Here's a refreshing twist. Looks like Georgia has a really good tight end, and they're actually using him. We all would have thought that would have been Avery Gilbert, who transferred from LSU, or the big O, Darnell Washington, in year two, but neither one is here. Instead, it's Brock Bowers, the freshman with a porn star name and what looks like really good hands and a ton of speed. Bowers in two games already has 9 catches, 150 yards, and 2 touchdowns. What a weapon this could be because of his speed and his size. He's 6'4", 230 as a freshman who can run like that. He's going to grow into his man's body as he goes along. This is what we all projected Isaac Nauta to be. Remember when Nauta came into Georgia several years ago and you thought, well, there's baby Gronk, and it just never happened. It's kind of what you hoped when Darnell Washington was this big, ridiculous-looking tight end athlete who Georgia just didn't use in his freshman season. He only had 7 catches. And Georgia's had other talented tight ends who went on to the NFL. Charlie Warner became a 6th-round pick of Kyle Shanahan. Trey McKitty, the transfer, was a 3rd-round pick by the Chargers. He only had 6 catches last season for Georgia in 4 games. This is nuts, but maybe Todd Monken realizes with a talented tight end, he can help whoever, my quarterback, be it JT Daniels or Stetson Bennett, because he's such an outlet and a mismatch. Brock Bowers, freshman, porn star name, really good game. Could be fun to watch the rest of the season. If you guys would, hit the subscribe button or follow this podcast wherever it is you get your favorite pods, and it'll be waiting for you each and every day. Also, check out the Daily Draft in downtown Woodstock. Go have lunch. I would say it's on me, but I don't have that kind of coin. But they will take 10% off your lunch order when you mention this podcast, The Daily 10. I'll be on the radio in Atlanta on 680 The Fan later today and back again tomorrow for the next edition of The Daily 10.
Subscribe to The Daily 10 now and get the latest breaking news and biggest stories of the day every morning. Get more at 680thefan.com or subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google, or wherever you get your favorite shows.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Hey everybody, Buck Ballew here, and as a recent customer of Jim Ellis Automotive and a longtime friend of the Vice President, Stacy Ellis, man, I know Jim Ellis Automotive Group takes pride in being a family-owned and operated business. I saw it firsthand. When Stacy's granddad, Jim Ellis, founded the company back in 71, his goal was to treat every customer like family by offering a car-buying experience that was both easy and fully transparent. And it worked. 50 years later, Stacy's dad, Jimmy Ellis, grew the organization to become Georgia's largest family-owned and operated automotive group. And today, third-generation family members like Stacy, along with more than 1,700 dedicated team members, are working hard to uphold the values Jim Ellis Automotive was founded on. And that's why Jim Ellis has been around for over 50 years. Enjoy the advantages of buying your next vehicle from a family-owned and operated dealership. Visit jimellis.com or stop by any of their 20 dealerships located throughout Metro Atlanta. Jim Ellis Automotive, where you can always expect the best.
This morning in the Atlanta airport, no one's missing a meal on Mac Wilburn's watch. With 11 restaurants to serve passengers, he's got dining for every destination. And it all started when Mac talked with First Horizon Bank about opening a franchise in the airport. Now it's open for business and cleared for takeoff. First Horizon Bank, let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Mac. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.